The World Dance. The World Dance celebrated human participation in the making and unmaking, the renewal and continuity of the world. While the people of the valley danced the sky dance for all people and beings of the earth, the sky people were dancing their part of the ceremony, the earth dance. The dead and the unborn danced on the wind and in the sea, birds in the air, the wild animals in secret places in the wilderness. Animal dancing is not like our dancing. We do not know their ceremonies. They dance their lives. The linked spirals of these two cosmic dances form the sacred image, the Heia'if. The world was danced during the dark of the moon after the equinox of spring. The ceremonies went on for 3 days, and on the evening of the third day the crescent moon would be first visible at sunset. The Madrone Lodge and the Black Adobe Lodge were in charge of the dance. The first day of the world. The earthly performance of the world dance began at daybreak, underground, in the Black Adobe Earth Lodges. These were underground chambers, always located outside town, on the hunting side. They were not as large as the Heimas of the Five Houses, so the dancers generally went in shifts, coming out after a few hours to make place for others. All the dancers of the first days of the world were older people, those whose children have children. As with many of the ceremonies called dances, during long periods no actual dancing went on. The ceremony in the Earth Lodge was a long chanting, led by the trained singers of the Black Adobe and Madrone. The deep ceremonial drum underground beat a heartbeat rhythm without break from sunrise to sunset. Old people of the town waited near the lodge in silence, or returned home from the singing in silence. Children were cautioned not to speak to their grandparents, who would not reply. The old people dancing fasted all day. They tied feathers in their hair, or wore a cape of thin, dark wool onto which feathers had been sewn, feathers not taken from birds raised or hunted, but found. None of the words of the songs of the first day were written down. As the sun set, the steady drumbeats stopped. People would begin to gather in the dancing place, the open area in the curve of the five Heimas. They brought wood for fires, especially apple wood saved for the occasion. The apple was a tree connected with death. At dusk, the dancers came up from the Black Adobe Lodge and into the dancing place. Those who danced this part of the ceremony had trained for it and were dressed for it, wearing black, tight-fitting clothes tied close at wrist and ankle, barefoot, their hair, face, hands, and feet smeared with white and gray ash. They were members of the Black Adobe and Madrone Lodges, and any townspeople who had asked to train with those lodges for the dancing. They came in file, singing. The words were archaic, and the songs, complex and somber, using very wide intervals, had an eerie and depressing quality. The dancers carried applewood torches, unlighted, upside down. When they were all gathered in the dancing place, the speaker of the Madrone came from the west with a lighted torch. From it the dancers lighted their torches, and with them, dancing, lighted the fire that was laid ready in the dancing place. If it was raining, high poles bearing a canopy would have been set up over the area. All the Heimas kept such equipment for rainy season ceremonies. The fire was not a roaring bonfire, but was kept small and hot. The dancers circled it in a shuffling line, carrying themselves in a kind of crouch, knees bent and arms raised and bent, the hands at about face level, shaking. All the other people attending stood or squatted in an outer ring. Most of the people of the town, or of that arm of the big towns, were there. All those who had lost a relative or friend to death since the last world dance were there. The dead singers kept up the shaking dance and kept the chant going, gradually increasing the tempo and raising the pitch, until suddenly one of the silent watchers in the dark outer ring called out the name of a person who had died during the past year. Others repeated the name in the rhythm of the chanting. The dancers picked it up. The name was repeated over and over, and all the various names the dead person had had were spoken and repeated, until the dead singers suddenly gathered in around the fire, chanting loud and fast and rocking their bent arms as if throwing or pushing something into the flames. and as suddenly ceased to sing, and crouched down, head bowed to earth, and body trembling. And the mourners did the same. Then, slowly and softly, the insistent beat of the dance was taken up by one voice and another. The dancers got up and danced. The chanting increased in pitch and tempo until another name was thrown on the fire. In the little towns of the lower valley, there were years when nobody died, when there were no names to throw on the fire. The ceremony of mourning would be held, but only the dancers who had trained for it participated. The others sat in silence in the outer ring. The ceremony lasted only a couple of hours at most. In the big towns, there were always deaths to be mourned, and there the ceremony became increasingly participatory and emotional as it went on. The first names thrown on the fire were usually those of older people. Late in the ceremony, it was the names of dead children that were spoken, and those born dead, who were all named at their burial so that they might be mourned at the mourning. As the ceremony went on, the people in the outer circle joined in the rocking dance motions and in the chanting, and began to cry out as the names of the dead were spoken again and again, and to call to the dead, and to weep aloud. All rocked, all sang, all wept together, and sank back into the grieving silence together, and again were shaken by the growing beat and by the voices crying the names of the dead. The barriers of shame and self-containment were broken down, the fear and anger of loss made public, and these quiet people screamed aloud in their admission of pain. When the last name had been thrown on the fire, the leaders of the dance began to slow and quiet the tempos, and the character of the chanting changed, the archaic words telling about places the souls of the dead may go in the four houses, and became a rain chant. The fires were allowed to die. At last the speaker said, "The names have been spoken." The dancers brought water up from the blue clay hayamas and poured it on the fire, then formed in line, and in silence and the dark returned to the black adobe lodge. The mourners marked their faces with the wet ash of the dead fire before going home. A traditional breakfast of milk, cornbread, and spring greens was eaten before they went to bed or in the morning. The ashes of the morning fires were scattered on the plowlands next day by the dancers of the rite. The second day of the world. People were likely to be worn out by the intense, passionate ceremonies of the previous night, and nothing got underway until well after noon. The five hayamas, the houses of earth, were in charge of this day's ceremonies of praise. Processions were made up of people between about 17 and 50 or 60 years old, and the leaders were older adolescents and young adults who were living on the coast, observing the period of sexual abstinence that was considered appropriate to their age. How many people joined the ceremony, and how elaborate it was, depended pretty much on these young leaders, and varied a great deal from year to year and from town to town. The following description is of a kind of ideal ceremony which was probably never fully performed in all its details. People from the first house, the obsidian, were supposed to go to the pastures and barns and poultry runs with songs for and about the domestic animals. These songs might be traditional, or composed by a poet-musician, or improvised on the spot, or a mixture. They were simple description, praise, without petitions for increase or any other demands. Often there was not much singing except for a few traditional choruses, such as the bull song, which belongs in the category known as lusty folk song. Oh, the bull he rode the cow around, the bull he rode the cow around, the cow she bore the bull around, the cow she bore the bull around, a ho, a hay, the bully bull. Oh, the ram he rode the ewe around, the ram he rode the ewe around, the ewe she bore the ram around, the ewe she bore the ram around, a ho, a hay, the ramrod ram. The processional visit around the barns and pastures often turned into a session of cow riding, or sheepdog exercises, or donkey races, or an impromptu horse show. Children made collars for favorite animals, woven of grass and pennyroyal, and the livestock might get a sprig of pennyroyal stuck in their halter, or their mane, or their wool, or have their stalls decorated, or be given a treat such as an extra handful of oats, and the poultry and himpy got an extra feeding. The second house, the blue clay, sent people along the creeks of the hunting side of town to sing to the game animals. These songs were old and well known, and it seemed that this procession was never scanted. Somebody always went singing to the deer. The third house, the serpentine, sent people into the woods and hills to the various gathering places and meadows used by the community. The speaker of the house was supposed to lead a long chant enumerating all the unsown crops, all the herbs, seeds, grasses, roots, fruits, barks, nuts, and leaves gathered for food or medicine or other uses by human beings. The people of the fourth and fifth houses, the adobes, went into the orchards with a similar chant of praise to the trees, and into the plowlands to name and praise the sown crops of the town. By early evening, all these groups had returned to town, and people were making ready for the ceremony of the second night, the wedding. Like the morning, this was a community observance of a personal act. Couples who had taken to living together during the year did not call themselves married until they had danced the wedding night. Any married couple who wanted to participated also, reaffirming their bond. The formality of the ceremony was slight. Everybody dancing the wedding met on the dancing place, where singers from all the Hayamas sang the marriage song, a very old, rather brief, joyous chorale, never reproduced and never sung but in that place on that night. And if the weather was good and the musicians willing, there might be some dancing afterwards. The marriage dance was a cheerful affair in three-quarter time, with couples dancing down the line and under other couples' raised arms, as in our old line and square dances. After that, everybody went home to the wedding dinner, at which hot wine and dirty jokes were traditional. Two towns elaborated on this simple festival. In Chukumas, bridegrooms were given a sedate and ceremonious dinner in their hayamas, and then sung to the house of their bride, where they would live henceforth, and only then was the wedding song sung for them. In Wakwaha, after the communal wedding song, the two adobe houses put on a sacred play, The Wedding of Awar and Belekwe, and music, dancing, and other romantic, erotic, or mystical plays accompanied the ceremonial drama. People said, "You're not really married till you've been married in Wakwaha," and couples undertaking or celebrating a long-lasting marriage often went to dance the world at that town. The third day of the world. Before dawn, in the darkness, the young adolescents, girls and boys up to 15 or 16 years old, got the little children up and led them out onto the upper-story balconies or the rooftop or any high place they could get onto. There they danced in place, not singing, with seed and deer hoof rattles to keep the rhythm. The older siblings and cousins carried babies too young to walk and taught the little ones the simple step-in-place of the dance. They faced southeast, and when the sun rose, they greeted it with a whispered chant, the 4x4 Heya. When the sun was clear of the hills, they went down and scattered out around the town and its gardens, the older children helping the younger ones, until everyone had found or had been given a feather and a stone. Each child holding the stone in the right hand and the feather in the left, a crossover or marriage of the usual ritual position of these two profoundly sacred things, the feather of the right-hand houses and the stone of the left, they regathered in the dancing place and came as a procession to the hinge of the town, between the dancing place and the common place. They halted there, and one little one was chosen to go forward towards the common place and cry out, "Let the children in." At this, the adults, waiting in their houses, of which the doors must be kept shut till then, could open the doors and welcome in their children. Breakfast in any household with children was a festival, and the rest of the last day of the world was for the children. The elements of reversal were playful. An adult speaking to a child was supposed to bow down or go on all fours, on penalty of being whacked with pine branches by any child in sight. Green clowns appeared and played tricks and performed juggleries. The lower valley towns staged mock wars, mudball and oak-gall battles, which might go on in the fallow fields and around the hunting side all afternoon, and frequently resulted in black eyes and minor bruises. A particular kind of marzipan, ground almonds sweetened with honey, colored and shaped into beasts, birds, flowers, and faces, was handed out by every self-respecting household. The day, often called Honey Day, ended with a bee dance and an ant dance by the very young children. This had to be concluded before the sun set. As the sun got low above the ridges, adolescents, back up on the roofs and balconies, began to call out, "Heya, heya." Most people then went up to join them, or climbed a nearby hill. Some of the older adolescents and adults would have spent the day climbing a nearby mountain. In Wakwaha, many would have gone up to the summits of Amakokan. There they awaited the first sight of the new moon as it followed the sun down into the west. Clouds and rain, of course, often hid both sun and moon at that time of year, but clouds and rain were people of the sky, and the view was not what mattered, so long as one was up high, or looking up, skyward. When sun and moon were down, the speaker of the obsidian house asked the moon to carry the blessing of earth and the people of earth through the houses of the sky. This single voice ended the 3 days of the world dance. People might wait in silence for a while in the twilight, watching for the rainbow people on the mountain slopes or in the air, walking on the roads of the wind, but before dark they went down, went home, whispering the Heya chant as they entered their own door. The day after the world. The 3 days of the world dance involve a kind of time reversal. The dance goes from mourning after death, through work and marriage, to childhood and infancy. The day after the world carries this movement one stage further. Anybody wishing to dance that day went early in the morning to the Black Adobe Earth Lodge, where the ceremonies had begun 3 days before. Members of that lodge led the group, usually not many people, to certain places inside valleys or canyons, near springs, or beside water. These places, often only a few paces in extent, and unmarked in any way, represented, reflected, places in the four houses, the right-hand world, places the reverse of graveyards, birth grounds, where the unborn wait to be born. The location and significance of the birth grounds was part of the teaching of the Black Adobe Lodge. At one of the birth grounds, lodge members would sing and teach to the other celebrants the song Shining of the Sun, which in both words and melody is related to the songs of Going Westward to the Sunrise, sung to the dying, and the newly dead. The matrix of the song was the word Hwavgepragu, Shining of the Sun. The other words might be sung in part, but rarely altogether, as printed here, written out for us by Alder of the Black Adobe of Sinshan. You are coming, Hwavgepragu. Surely you are coming. The way is short, the way is easy, from town to town. Come when you want to. Come into sunlight, Hwavgepragu, Shining of the Sun. All oceans and sea beaches were considered to be birth grounds. The unborn were likely to be there. So there were always jokes when young women went down to the mouths of the Na. What did you come back with this time? The following teaching piece is part of the teachings of the Black Adobe Lodges on the day after the world. The sands of all the beaches of all the coasts, the grains of sand of all the beaches of all the coasts of all the world, are the lives of the unborn, who will be born, who may be born. The waves of the sea, the bubbles of foam of the waves that break on the coasts of the seas of the world, all the flashes and gleams of light on the waves of the seas of the world, the flicker of sunlight on waves of the ocean, those are the lives of the nine houses of life, without end, vanishing, without stay, forever. The poem, The Inland Sea, side 11, is related to these teachings also.